This is the Improved Photography Podcast, episode number 112. This episode is brought to you by Squarespace. Squarespace is the easiest way to create a beautiful website, blog, or online store for you and your ideas. Squarespace features an elegant interface, beautiful templates, and incredible 24/7 customer support. Try Squarespace at squarespace.com and enter offer code IMPROVE at checkout to get 10% off. Squarespace, build it beautiful. Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the Improved Photography Podcast. I'm Jim Harmer, your host, and I am joined by a bunch of photographers from all around the United States, some of which I've seen in the last week at our Oregon Coast Improved Photography Workshop. Darren Meller, who's always with us. Welcome, Darren.
Hey-o!
And Jeff Harmon, our hobbyist editor on improvephotography.com.
Hey there.
And we're joined by a new voice, a photographer that I met at the Oregon Coast Workshop, and I really loved his photography. He taught a little mini workshop there for some of the people who were there, and really was an excellent teacher, and is joining Darren on his new show. We can announce the name now, Portrait Session, that will be released in about 3 weeks. You'll be able to subscribe to that on iTunes. So, Nick Page, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on the show. I'm excited to be a part of all of this. Thanks a lot.
Well, we know everybody a little bit, but Nick, tell us a little bit about your photography, and then we're going to get into the stories of the week.
Well, I'm a freelance photographer. I live down here in southeastern Washington. And I do a little bit of everything. I shoot everything from weddings to real estate, landscape, fine art. I do a little bit of everything. That's where I'm at.
Well, that's awesome. Well, your photography is incredible. Be sure to check it out. Is it nickpagephotography.com?
Yep, that's it.
Be sure to check that out. We'll have that linked over at the show notes at improvephotography.com/112. Nick's a full-time photographer for a reason. His work is awesome. Well, we had some exciting things happen recently in the photo world, but Darren and Nick and I have been out on the Improved Photography Workshop, and so we haven't been able to talk about it as recently. Canon's 50-megapixel monster was announced recently. Jeff, what do you think about this thing?
Well, okay, so initially I was really excited about it, mainly because I've been taking a beating as a Canon shooter for so long from all the Nikon folks with their 36 megapixel D810 and D800. And so I was really excited that finally Canon's got kind of a response to that. But then as I was reading more about the articles that are out there, photographylife.com has a really good one that kind of, actually they've got a couple of them, but they talk about, is this really something we need, and is it really going to turn out well? It's going to be really interesting to see the tests that we get. That one of the points they made was it could end up being something really hard to shoot. With that many megapixels, it could be, it might mean that you have to hold the camera more steady, that the lenses may not have enough resolution to supply all of the detail that the sensor can pick up. There could be some negatives to where this thing is really tough to shoot.
Yeah, for sure. I definitely saw that when I switched to the Nikon D800 when it came out. Any mistakes or errors you have in your shooting, your focus, your lenses, suddenly you notice them a lot when you switch to a higher megapixel sensor. And the problem that I see here, though, is there are a select few lenses that can actually resolve 50 megapixels of detail. And so I get why we have a 36 megapixel sensor. I don't know if the lens lineups are quite ready for 50. Nick, what do you think about this one?
You know, I was super excited when I heard that this camera is coming out. And then when I got to looking at it, I just felt a little bit underwhelmed because I noticed that the ISO range is actually limited to 6400, 100 to 6400. And for somebody like me that likes to shoot the night sky, and I shoot a lot of weddings where I have to really bump up the ISO, and, you know, in a lot of sporting events, you have to really push the ISO. This camera isn't going to be for those people. I feel like me personally, I'm probably waiting more for the 5D Mark IV. I think that's going to be directed a little bit more at me.
And Darren, what are your thoughts?
I'm with Jeff in this respect. I think that right now there just really isn't a lens right now that has the effective megapixels needed to actually transmit that image from an analog image to a digital image rendered on a sensor. So right now the sensor isn't the weakest link. The lenses are at this moment, in my opinion.
One other thought that I had about the camera is the ISO range is low-ish. It's at least not an improvement that we would like to see. 6400 is awesome. But like Nick said, I'm in situations all the time where I'm pushing the limits of my ISO. Right. And so, you know, it's not that the ISO is the only spec on the camera that we care about. It's certainly not. But it's one that I do care about a lot. But the other thing to think about is a lot of people complained when the D800 came out saying, 36 megapixels. Why are you adding so many megapixels? Why not just give us better low light performance? And what I found is that when you have all those pixels, you can do a lot of noise reduction and stuff before it really takes away from the image quality, because you have so much detail to work with. And also the way that I shoot all the time, I'm taking a picture of this mountain and that river and that person and that sky and putting them together. And so very frequently I'm taking small elements from a frame and pasting them into a larger canvas. And so megapixels is a big deal to me. But having said that, this one is not a buy for me. I would definitely be interested in trying it. Nobody's touched this camera, and so we don't know. Maybe it only goes up to 6400, but it does 6400 well. And so, you know, it's way too early to make any kind of judgments. But like you guys said, I was not as excited as I should be. But I think that there definitely is a target market for this camera. What do you guys think? Who's the target customer for this?
I would personally say that the one with the anti-aliasing filter is probably for your portrait photographer who is using mainly speed lights, studio lights in a controlled environment where they're not having to worry about ISO. And then the one without the anti-aliasing filter is probably going to be your landscape photographer who wants to pull that dynamic range out of all those megapixels.
Yeah, I'd probably add maybe a product photographer, a lot of commercial photography. In fact, I think this would be a good choice for. Certainly if you shoot medium format, this is a pretty approachable medium format. But I think for the general photographer, the specs weren't quite what I was expecting for it.
I think there's another potential downside to it too, with just the sheer size of the files that are going to come out of this thing. You already have to have a pretty decent computer to work on images. These file sizes are just going to be so big, it could get unwieldy.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say is when I go to shoot a sporting event or a wedding, I'm coming home with 2,000 photos. So I would be shooting this thing in a reduced megapixel setting anyways, just because I would be filling up every card in my bag if I shot this at 50 megapixels.
I am going to be interested to see how the tests come out, though, because the Canon sensors for some time now, not only has the ISO been a little disappointing in the sensors, but the dynamic range has really been behind. And given that this camera, it seems like they're trying to target that medium format market, and landscapes could really benefit from it. But if that dynamic range isn't there, if it's a poor performer on that, that's going to kill it.
Yeah, that's true. I think one of the things that we're seeing in the full frame market right now is that 36 megapixel Sony sensor that's been used on the Sony A7R, on the Nikon D800, D810, you know, slightly different versions of it, but it's basically the same sensor architecture. That sensor was really, really ahead of its time. I mean, that was over 4 years ago that sensor came out, and it's still kind of the standard in this that we're comparing all these cameras to is how does it compare to that 36 megapixel sensor? And so I don't know. It's an interesting one. I'm anxious to see how it goes. There probably will be shoots that I'll want to rent this and try it out, but I it's not one that I was like ready to jump for the buy button on. But there were more stories that came out this week. Jeff, tell us a little bit about the Apple Photos app. Did you check into that?
No, I run Mac, so I can't go try them, but I read all about these.
I set up Jeff. Jeff's our Windows user, and Nick surprised me. He is also a Windows user, but tell us about the new iMac too, Jeff.
Yeah, exactly. I would love to tell you about that one.
Well, Apple announced the new Photos app. So Apple killed Aperture, and which was its competitor to Lightroom. And I think everybody was a little bit surprised when that happened. You know, it had been quite a while since they had announced the previous version, and everybody thought, okay, they're kind of slow, but soon, right? It's coming. And then they just eventually killed it. And it was to be replaced by this Photos app. And the app, as we've seen details of it for the developers now, is certainly not an Aperture replacement. It's not even a competitor to Lightroom. It's very much an iPhoto improvement. It's very much a consumer-focused, not a professional tool. We'll see what it can become with time. We saw this when Apple killed Final Cut with version 10, and then later, you know, started to build back a lot of what was lost, and now a lot of filmmakers are loving Final Cut again. So we'll see if that happens, but right now it is not looking the best. But in that same vein, Lightroom 6, which is probably going to be announced at least in the next couple months, was leaked online, or at least there was a leak online. We never know if these things are real or not. I don't know what you all saw of the specs that were leaked, but the one that leaped off the page to me was facial recognition.
The big one I thought that was there was GPU usage. So right now it just relies on CPU for everything, and the leak was that it's going to start leveraging GPU, which that'd be a big deal.
So for the non-geeks among us, tell us a little bit about that.
So in your computer, you've got a processor that does the bulk of the work. Everything you do relies on that. But there's a video card in there, too, that has capabilities of doing processing a lot more now than ever.
And, let's not call them processors. Let's call them minions. It makes me happier. Okay. They're like these little minions in your computer that are doing all your stuff for you.
All right. Minions. Fine. Okay. So in the core part of it, you know, the CPU, the main computer part has been around forever. The GPU part that's in the video cards has not been until, I don't know, the last decade or so. And video games have been taking advantage of that in a major way for a long time. That is like more important almost than the CPU for video games. With photo editing, it hasn't really taken advantage of that yet. Lightroom almost ignores it so far. So if it does start doing it, you could have things like after you've applied filters, radio filters, graduated filters, some of the effects that you can apply in Lightroom. If today, as you switch in between photos, it can kind of delay. You might get that little loading message in the bottom part of the screen. And that's because it has to go and calculate all those effects to apply to the filter, the raw file that you're looking at. If it's GPU accelerated, that can go way faster.
Yeah, that is definitely exciting, and performance is something that a lot of people are not real excited about Lightroom right now. A lot of people are, in fact, switching to things like Photo Mechanic, you know, maybe even more, you know, that a lot of sports photographers use because it's a lot faster than Lightroom. And so I'm definitely excited to see Adobe putting more into the software to take better advantage of the hardware you have in your computer to make things just a little bit snappier. Well, Darren, you also posted an article here that we saw on Petapixel about anti-paparazzi clothing. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so apparently we're not going to get any more pictures of Jim running around anymore, but they created this new, this DJ created this new flashback gear, and essentially it just looks like a simple gray fabric, but it has billions, he actually said gazillions, but I didn't want to use a fake word there, of nanospheres that actually reflect the light back to the sensor to overexpose the image. So if they're using any type of lighting source, it just ruins the image. It just completely washes out their face, makes it look drab, and so that way we can't get any more shots of Jim or celebrities running around anymore. So it's kind of a bummer, but it's kind of cool.
Yeah, so nanosphere is actually marketing speak for those orange safety vests that the guys in road construction wear.
Yep.
It's basically that kind of material that's highly reflective. So when the paparazzi's flashes go off, then it, you know, just reflects a lot of light, and so all the photos are ruined. So I thought this was pretty cool. I thought that was a clever idea. I'm sure there's a paparazzo or two out there who's hating this, but I thought that was a pretty cool thing.
Yeah,
I feel like this. Oh,
Go ahead.
Feel like this says so much about the state of our society right now that people are actually designing clothes to ruin paparazzi photos. It's a totally different reality than I live in.
It's fantastic. Well, this week, as we mentioned on the introduction, three of us were at the Oregon Coast Photography Workshop. Now, these are completely free workshops that we're doing all over the world, about one a month during 2015. And we did one. We had 55 people about who were there at the workshop, and it was an incredible experience. And so we talked about some of the things that we learned in the workshop and out of it. Jeff wasn't able to join us, but we're going to talk about all the things that we learned while doing it, and hopefully give you a little bit of the experience that we got while we were there, at least the photography stuff that we learned. Let's go in reverse order, maybe. Darren, tell us one of the things you learned.
One of the things I learned is probably, in my honest opinion, going to a workshop is the best way to learn unique tips and tricks. I learned different things from Nick. I learned different things from other people that attended. And just by observing how other people work with a craft, it's awesome.
Cool. And so one thing that I learned while we were there is about drawing a sunrise. The first night we got there, there was a lighthouse that my wife Emily came with me, and my sister-in-law Haley was there. And so we came in late at night on the drive-in, and we stopped at a lighthouse. It was just beautiful, but the conditions weren't real great. It was just a black night. It was overcast, and so it was just the lighthouse and blackness, and there was just nothing really interesting happening in the scene other than that. And I wanted some kind of background behind the lighthouse. So what we did is we woke up early the next morning, tried to shoot Thor's Well, which is this awesome location where it's just a sinkhole in the beach, really, that goes down about 30 feet. What is that? Maybe 13 yards or something, like 13 meters. And then the water just kind of comes shooting out of it. And it's a really cool long exposure. But it was too low of a tide. So we got in the car and we booked it back. Darren said I was driving like Mario Andretti or something. Yeah. We had to hurry to get back to the lighthouse, and the light was just starting to fade in the sky. Since we were facing the west, the sunrise was behind us in the morning. So morning sunrises were lame, and sunsets were where all the action was happening. But there was just enough color in the sky coming over that we could make a picture there. So we pulled up to the parking lot. I hadn't even seen Darren yet. And we jump out of our cars, and it's about a quarter to a half a mile hike straight up a hill to this lighthouse. And the light is fading fast. And so Emily, my wife, who knows my sensibilities and that I would not be able to stand it if I missed the sunrise, says, "Don't even take the keys out of the ignition. Just stop the car. I'll take care of it, and you run." So I said, "Thank you." I grabbed my bag and I started sprinting up that hill as fast as I can. I was ready to cough up a lung by the time I got to the top of the hill. And there was just a little bit of color still in the sky. And so we got to the back of this mountain and took a picture. I was fairly happy with the composition, but it's a really boring photo straight out of the camera. I mean, just not a lot happening. And so I took the photo into Lightroom, and I said, let's at least try drawing a sunrise in this one. There was enough color in the sky that it, you know, could be convincing. And so I took the photo mostly in Lightroom using the radial brushes, and just tried to draw in a little bit of a sunrise. I came into Photoshop and drew some reflections of the sun on the water, and then drew an actual sun in Lightroom. And I think it turned out pretty convincing. I was really happy with how it turned out. And so that's a technique I've tried a couple times with sometimes great results, sometimes not so great results, but I'm getting a little bit better on. So drawing in a sunrise on an otherwise kind of dull conditions was pretty cool. It's definitely a takeaway that I got.
Yeah, I know. When I saw your photo during the second day, I was up there at the same time shooting the same basic composition. And then I saw that sun. I was like, wait a minute.
Something is not right here.
Why didn't I get a sunset in the morning? So one of the first things that I learned during this trip was how extremely out of shape I was. I realized that maybe I'm not the extremely fit person that I thought I was. But so in the same vein, I learned the importance of packing a little bit lighter than I normally do. I'm used to packing my great big AW500 low pro backpack completely full and it weighing 50 pounds. And I quickly realized that how big of a mistake that was. Some of the places we were hiking to, I don't know what the elevation drop was. It had to have been around 500 feet because some of those trails were like steep and sketchy. By the time you got down to the beach, just going downhill, you were a little tired, but coming back up, I was sucking wind pretty hard. So I learned how important it is to pack a little bit lighter than on your normal chute when you're going to be doing hiking.
Yeah, that's a good lesson. Nobody regrets packing too light. It's nice if you're light. You may have forgot something, but at least it's light.
Yeah, exactly. Another thing I learned is what you do in the event of getting hit by a wave. I got hit while we were at Thor's Well. I got hit by this wave that was like, I don't know, shoulder height at least. Camera got soaked. I was completely drenched. It hit me hard enough that it like kind of knocked me over a little bit. And so luckily, I had stolen a little hand towel out of my hotel room the night before. I don't condone that, but it's okay if I do it. And so I took the battery out of the camera as quick as I could, hurried to the car, dried it off as best I could, and then wrapped it in a dry towel and just left it alone for the rest of the day, hoping and praying that I didn't ruin my camera. But that was another thing that I learned on this trip.
That's good. You know, I don't know how many times I've made the mistake of watching the waves and saying, okay, I'm at a safe spot, it's manageable, and then all of a sudden, mega wave comes and you're drenched. So every time I tell myself, no, I'm safe, I'm in an okay spot, it's not. You're not.
Yeah, I think my famous last words were, it seems to be going down, and then bam, it just knocks me over.
Yeah. One thing that I really liked that we did on the workshop that we haven't always done in the other free workshops we've done before is we had a projector, and at each morning we looked at the photos from the previous day. Everybody would submit their two best and we'd all take a look at it. And it was true, this workshop has, as it always has been, there are always photos from beginner photographers or inexperienced photographers that you see and you're like, that's actually pretty cool. I want to go do something with that. And to me, that was the most important thing that we get from doing these workshops. I've heard a couple people say, I don't know if I want to go on one of these workshops because sometimes you have like 50 people there. It might be too many people and I might get lost in the mix. Totally not true. When you go with a big group like this, it's like you've spent a month in the location. Because you have 50 photographers going in all different directions every morning, trying different places, new creative ideas in the different spots, and you get to see what they're doing. And nobody minds if you go borrow somebody's composition. That's like the whole purpose of the workshop. And so you get so many ideas that you end up with awesome photos because you get everybody's experience kind of working together. And I loved that about the workshop.
Yeah, and one thing that I learned also as we are going through photos with those best of the day photos and looking at other participants, never shoot in the middle of the day. And I am extremely guilty of this. I there's so many shots in Europe that I wish that I could reshoot that were in the middle of the day. But as we were going through those, most of the comments that came out of Jim's mouth when it was in the middle of the day shot was, it doesn't speak to me. I wish that we could come back and revisit this spot when there's interesting light, either in the morning or the evening. And that's big. I think that a lot of people just kind of get lazy. They get on location. They want to sacrifice sleep and they go out and shoot about 2 or 3 in the afternoon or even around noon. And the shot just looks really blah.
Yeah. And it's unfortunate when you see a photo like that, that's well composed, has a great subject, and it still just has no personality, no mood, no life to it because the lighting in the photo is boring. And it drives me crazy to see what is otherwise an awesome photo just missing that one thing.
Yeah.
One thing that I experienced, unfortunately, was the tip of not hitting cows. As we were driving on the last morning to the Redwoods in California, it was dark in the morning, and of course we made the mistake of being the first car out there, cow out there. And my wife was driving and there was a black cow. We saw the car, the cow, and so she started swerving, and cows is so dumb. It just kept walking into our car. And so it got a rear view mirror right to the head of the cow, but the cow was fine. It just walked off going 55 miles an hour, ripped our rear view mirror off, but we're glad that we were okay. So don't hit cows is my tip. But the other thing that I learned is, when I'm traveling and I have a couple bags, I've made this mistake so many times that I have things kind of split between my bags. And this time I did a little bit better. Than I put all my flash gear in one bag and a ready bag in another one. So I have one backpack that's totally ready. It has batteries, memory cards, a camera, the lens that I'll use the most often, everything in there, so that if I totally forget the other bag or forget something in the other bag, it's okay. I have all the essentials in one spot. And I have made that packing mistake a few times now where I split it too much, and then you get to the location, you're like, oh, I have everything except the memory cards.
Or yeah. Darren's only a text away if you want to shoot cannon and come over to the dark side and shoot a picture, a really awesome picture of a boat in a river.
Yeah, that's right. Darren was at a restaurant and I was like, Darren, my battery's dead. And so he was very nice to let me borrow his cannon. And I shot his cannon for a night light painting shoot that was really fun. But before we go on, let's take a second to thank our sponsor. Squarespace is a sponsor of the Improved Photography Podcast. I've tried so many different services for my photography portfolio, and Squarespace has been awesome. Easy to update and big, beautiful pictures on lots of designs. Those are the ones that really get me excited. But also, you can hardly fault it for starting at only $8 a month. It really is a great value. Are any of you guys using Squarespace as well?
Yeah, I'm actually using Squarespace now. I started off with WordPress, and I find that with Squarespace, I keep my website updated more often just because it's so much easier to use. And the mobile pages with Squarespace just looks so much better than they ever did with the WordPress plugins I was using.
Yeah, I've already got my site updated from the Oregon Coast trip. You're actually excited to update your website because it's easy enough and people get to see your stuff. Well, to start a trial with no credit card required, go to squarespace.com and use offer code IMPROVE to get 10% off your first purchase. We thank Squarespace for their support of Improved Photography. Squarespace, build it beautiful. All right, we've talked about a lot of things already on this episode, but let's get into some of the other things that you guys have learned.
Very cool. Another thing that I learned is I had befriended Zach, actually, a really cool guy. I had befriended him before the trip, and luckily he went on this trip. And the nice part about him is he's from the area. So I just went where he decided to go. He knew all the best spots. He knew the whether it'd be better at sunrise or sunset. He kind of had all these preconceived notions of where he wanted to go. And I was just like, I'm good with it. I'll go where you go, buddy. You know, I'm just following you. And I ended up getting so much better shots and quite a few shots that I wouldn't have got otherwise, because he had these preconceived ideas on where he wanted to go. So finding somebody from the area to kind of tag along with, especially if they're a photographer, I think that was super useful for me.
Yeah, that's a good point, Nick, because honestly, to that point, it's you have to be really willing to listen to new things. And what I did on this trip is I found that I usually talk a lot. I'm a chatterbox. My dad said I'm a chatty Cathy. And this time I sat back and I listened more than I talked this time, and I learned so much. And I think by observation, you can just take so much in, especially when you have all these photographers surrounded by you and they're just sharing this awesome advice.
One thing that I learned or did on this workshop that was really helpful is when I've gone light painting with other photographers before, it's like when you're eating breakfast with a group and everyone is chewing with their mouth open and it's just driving you crazy. My pet peeve is light painting with others. It drives me crazy because everybody's like, hey, let's do that light painting thing. It's like, mow down the landscape with flashlights at random. It's crazy. Just like if you were making a portrait with flashes, you don't just stick the flash anywhere. you got to put the light in specific spots and it produces a dramatically different result. Exactly. And so we got a group together and we said at the start, we said, okay, no flashy crazy. Let's work together and let's make a cool photo. And boy, did we make a cool photo light painting. There was this old boat called the Meredith Hume that's apparently been, you know, been kind of, well, it's just kind of crashed on the beach there for 30 years. And so it's old, rotten, decayed, everything right on the beach. And we were able to get up really close to it. It was just, it's this incredible, incredible boat to see. And we were doing light painting there, and Mark jumped into the boat and was light painting from inside. We had one guy on the far side and another up close. Brian was light painting up close, and Micah was on the far side. And working together in a group, and you know, everybody had different input. Let's try this. Let's put light here. And in the end, everybody ended up with a cool shot of that boat because we were able to work together as a group. So I guess the tip that I get from that is when you're light painting, you have to think about it the same way you would approach flash photography. You wouldn't use on-camera flash with your flash photography in an ideal world. And so why would you be light painting with your flashlight standing right above your camera? That's just like using on-camera flash. So if you really think through where the lights are coming from, you get a cool result.
Not to mention you wouldn't have like 50 light sources.
Yes. And they're always different, different, you know, color temperatures of light. And somebody always has a spotlight. It ends up madness.
And one thing I learned on this trip was also to be brave, be willing to maybe step outside of your comfort zone in some areas, but also know your physical limitations. Everybody on this podcast who's been listening to it for a while knows I'm a severe klutz. And there are places where Micah and Jim went and this other guy, Alan, on our shoot. There's places I wouldn't even go, but I have to say congratulations. You guys are walking billy goats.
It was a little bit scary, but see, I was walking back on the beach and Micah had climbed up pretty high on this very, very steep mountain. And Emily and I were walking past holding hands at the sunset. And Micah says, Jim, come shoot up here. And I kept walking. I said, no thanks. We're gonna go to this other spot where I won't die. And then I walked about, you know, a couple more steps and I said, Emily, he wasn't inviting me to shoot with him. He was challenging me. So I had to go up the mountain and shoot with him. But it was really fun to shoot with them and to get a view from up top. So you know, sometimes you gotta hoof it a little bit to get to the spot. One thing that I've been struggling with this week is my Drobo. I mentioned on a previous podcast that I had a significant problem with the Drobo that was definitely the Drobo's fault early on. And I was pretty frustrated with Drobo because it was in the first 90 days that I bought it. It was under warranty. It was a hardware problem. And they refused to swap it out, to replace it. And it was definitely a problem. And I did lose all of the data on that Drobo. I had a backup, so it was fine. But a lot of people don't. And so, yeah, you know, that was not okay, and it was not an okay customer service response that when somebody gets something that's in warranty and it breaks in the warranty period and it is a hardware problem, it needs to be replaced. So I was very, very unhappy with Drobo for that reason earlier on. Since then, it's been humming along. I have a hard time replacing Drobo because it's so fast and it's a pretty reasonable price for what it is compared to other RAID systems. And so this week I came to update, or I came in, I was having issues with my Drobo with permissions, which it shouldn't do anyway. I don't know what the deal was. I called up Drobo support and they said, we won't help you unless you pay more money, which is always frustrating, a little bit understandable, but it's frustrating when they don't have the answer on their website or something. It's like, you know, I don't know. I paid for two of these. I paid a lot of them, and I bought them both within the last year. I kind of felt like they maybe owed me a quick answer to something like that, but they refused. Then I was like, okay, whatever. I'll just reformat my main one and bring the data over for my backup Drobo. Plug in the backup Drobo, red light. And I was like, no. So it had issues. So I had two Drobos with issues. And fortunately, I was able to sort it out myself. No data was lost in the production of this podcast. But it was a pretty scary thing. You know, when you're talking about your whole business, all of your photo library is on these Drobos. You own two of them for redundancy. I'm as careful as I can be. I don't know. It had me a little bit worried. All RAID devices have issues. Just go read the reviews of any RAID device out there on Amazon, and you'll be convinced that they're all horrible, right? Everybody is going to have issues. It's not bleeding edge tech, but it's leading edge tech. And so there are going to be problems with them. Is Drobo more prone to problems than others? I don't know. I had before these some Netgear ReadyNASes, and I never had an issue with them in the 2 years I owned them. So I don't know if we can say Drobos are prone to problems or if I've just had a little bit of bad luck here. I'm still keeping them for now, but they're definitely on my caution list when you're shopping.
Wait, I just bought one.
Yeah. Send it back.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think you're selling too many Drobos with this episode. So what prompted you to switch over to Drobo from the Netgear?
It was too slow. It just wasn't fast enough. And that's the one thing that you have to love with Drobo is I've compared it to a few others, and it's just so fast. And you know, there are other fast ones. Jeff Harmon pointed me to the G-Tech one, I think is the ones we were talking about that have Thunderbolt. So if you're on a Mac or a computer that happens to have Thunderbolt, pretty much only Macs that are going to have it. Thunderbolt connections are super fast, super, super fast, but there aren't a lot of devices that work on Thunderbolt yet. USB 3 is fast, but not even in the ballpark in real world tests. And so I really only have the option, or I could only deal with the option of something that has Thunderbolt. So there are only a couple options out there. Drobo's a lot less expensive. I already have them, and I don't know. So that's how I got where I am. Again, I'm not switching. I'm still sticking with my Drobos, but it does have me a little bit gun shy on these.
Yeah, I'm actually happy to be surrounded by 4, 5, or 6 terabyte hard drives that I back up the Drobo with and then put in a safety deposit box, because I don't want to put all my eggs in one basket with one Drobo. That's one thing that I was leery about when going to a RAID system, because I did the research and found, yeah, they do have their drawbacks. You know, it's not bleeding edge, but it's definitely cutting edge, and there's definitely early adoption things. Like my iPhone 6 Plus, I'm not completely satisfied with it right now because I think the next version is going to be better, even though Apple is usually pretty good at that.
Of course it will be. It'll be the best iPhone they've ever built.
Every year.
They say that in every announcement.
Just to add to that conversation a little bit, I just recently published an article out on improvephotography.com about the best brand of hard drives for photographers.
Awesome article, by the way.
Which ones should be trusted at this point? And there's a little bit of controversy about the data that's behind the article. You should go check it out and read it. But what it comes down to is there is a distinction between what you should put inside these Drobo or any RAID system. The hard drives that go in them have a lot to do with the performance of the system as well as the reliability. So making a good choice about the brand of hard drives is really important. And one reason the Drobo is so fast with the Thunderbolt connector, that connector enables really fast data throughput. But if it's a single drive, you're not going to realize the full potential of the system. It's because it's in a RAID 0 configuration. It means it can take two drives and leverage like the read and write performance of both at the same time that makes it so fast. The combination of the Thunderbolt and at least two, if you can get three, that's like actually the best performance you can have in a RAID system would be three drives.
And so, the other thing that the Drobo does to help with that speed is it has a little SSD chip, not a full drive, SSD chip at the bottom. And so things like your folder structure and stuff that when you get on the Drobo and you're wanting to navigate to something, pop, that's up right away, those files you use regularly. And then it starts spinning up the drive so that you can access the data.
Right. The negative, though, with Drobo specifically is they have implemented their own proprietary way of using all those drives. It's not standard, whereas other systems, the G-Tech is one, and other NAS systems, it's a standard way. You can swap them in and out. They can change. You can build the arrays. So you're kind of tied in a little bit with Drobo, with their technology and their tech support, which you've had a lot more trouble with recently. and it can be a bit of a negative there.
Yeah, that is true. And I was aware of that when I started with Drobo. My thought there was, I'm buying two Drobos anyway. One is my daily driver and one is the backup. So I don't really care if it's proprietary or not. I can always get the data off because I have another box.
Very right. True.
Well, okay. That's enough of the Drobo talk. And one other thing that was really interesting to me, on the workshop, we talked a lot about composition. I've mentioned on the podcast that I've been working on a book for on composition that will come out later this year. And now I'm wondering if I can even explain it in a book or if this needs to be a video. But I've found some really exciting things. And so as I was out shooting, there are these sea stacks, just like small but tall rock croppings that kind of come out of the water. And it just makes this magical looking beach scene. It's just absolutely beautiful, but composing them is really tricky. And I saw a lot of the photographers, me included, were struggling to find compositions that made sense because there was just so much happening in the photos. And so I what I started doing by the end is I would walk around, try to find these sea stacks, could never quite find them placed how I wanted it to. And so what I would do is I would just take a picture of one sea stack, walk around, and in that same lighting, you know, same time of day, shoot two or three other sea stacks, look for a cool part of the beach, how it was turning, and Photoshop all those photos together. It was really fun. I've talked about doing this in a lot of other shoots that we've done, but I really liked doing that. It just makes me feel a little bit like a painter. I love the feeling of controlling what ends up in the frame. And so that was really fun. Well, in every episode, we share a few doodads, things that we have found in the last week that we like. Jeff Harmon, tell us what your doodad is for this week.
All right. So this time it's not a gear thing. It's a book. And
with paper?
Yeah. Whoa. I even bought the actual paper version.
Oh,
he's going old school.
It's actually
he runs a Windows computer and he reads.
Oh man! Ouch! Oh, okay. Anyway, sharpening. It's a book about sharpening. And as I have used Lightroom to sharpen my photos over the last couple of years, it really seems like it's a bit of an art to figure out exactly how much sharpening that you need to do for your photo, how much for the type of scene that you have, and how much for the medium of where you're going to publish your photos. If it's to the web versus a print or a canvas, whatever it might be, there's different sharpening that to do. And this book, it's a little dated. It was published in 2009. So it talks about, I think, Lightroom 4, and it's not up to date all the way, but the principles are still very applicable. I love the way they approach it to make it so that you can understand kind of what you have to do to get the sharpening to look right for what your picture, what you're going after, and how you're going to use the photo. Oh, the name of the book could be helpful.
Leave it mysterious. That was good.
Real World Image Sharpening with Adobe Photoshop, Camera Raw, and Lightroom. It's the second edition, and it's by Jeff Hsu and Bruce Fraser.
He may or may not have switched up names so that you may or may not end up on the right book. Guys. Well, the doodad that I wanted to share in this episode is a new service we have at improvephotography.com. that I think is something to be really excited about. You can find it at improvephotography.com/portfolio review. I spent a lot of time working on the system to make sure this works totally smoothly for everybody. Everybody wants feedback on your photos. You go to Flickr and all kinds of different websites, you post your photos, and you get all these nice photo, awesome, cool things, but you never really get an in-depth portfolio review. And on our classes at photoclasses.com, Darren and I have done thousands and thousands of portfolio reviews over the last few years. And it's been a great experience to give some feedback on the photos. But we usually only do 3 photos at a time during the class because you're working on progressing throughout the class. And I keep getting requests for photographers who are just sending me their work, so somehow find my email address and send me their work. And I wish I could look at all of them, but I just can't. But we wanted an answer to that, and that is improvephotography.com/portfolio reviews. For as cheap as $39, you upload your portfolio, your very best photos, tell us a little bit about you and your photography, what you're working on, and then we'll have one of the photographers at Improve Photography. Darren's doing it, I'm doing it, and we're hoping to get some of these other guys on there. And we'll look through your portfolio. We'll record a little mini podcast session about 10 minutes long for you, going through each of the photos, saying where you are as a photographer, and then we place you in one of our skill levels. You can find that at improvephotography.com/skill levels. And there we're, I have kind of the beginner stage, all 7 different stages until the professional photographer. And so you can kind of see, you know, where you are as a photographer and specifically the things that we'd like to see you working on to improve. So far, the results we've had from those who have been the first to buy has been incredibly positive. All the time we have products that we ship out and people, you know, get their product, they're happy with it, they leave, we never hear about, you never hear from them again. Just about every person that we've sent a portfolio review to has written back immediately, just thrilled with the service and the clear direction it's provided for their photography. So definitely check it out, improvephotography.com/portfolio reviews. I hope you love the price. I've spent a lot of time thinking about how we could keep that price as low as possible for all of you. And I think $39 is a pretty nice spot for what you're getting. Other websites that do this, in fact, there's only one other that I could find that even offers online portfolio reviews, is charging about 3 to 4 times that much money. And so I think it's a pretty exciting thing.
That's cool.
That is very cool. My doodad seems so much more bland than what you just said. But I'll go on. The show must go on. So mine is the Sunway Photo. It's spelled Sunwayfoto, I believe. And it's the L bracket. I think the L bracket is like the most useful thing I've bought for my camera in forever. It's basically just a Arca Swiss compatible bracket that mounts to the bottom of your camera. That way you can mount it normally horizontally, and then you can flip it up and go into portrait orientation without having to undo your ball head and go sideways. And as many panoramas and real estate and stuff that I do, it's super useful. It's nice because you can get your shot nice and level if you're doing real estate, and then just undo your little clamp, go into vertical, and you're still level. It's super useful. And the Sunway Photo is about half of what a Kirk is. I think it runs for like $68. The Kirk is like 160 or something like that. So that's my recommendation.
Good.
Very cool. So for those of you who don't know what an L bracket is, because I had a question on this for a long time, it's a metal piece that goes under your camera like a regular tripod quick release plate, but it goes the length of the bottom of your camera and then turns the corner to go up the right side of your camera. Turns to go to the left side of your camera. And so it's just an L-shaped piece of metal that bolts onto your camera. And the benefit is you can, let's say you keep your ball head where it is and you're shooting landscape side to side, and then you want to go vertical orientation, you just take off your quick release plate, lift up the camera, and because that metal comes to the side as well, it's like you have a quick release plate there too, and you can just put your camera on. So it really is very handy for shooting. I got one when I switched to really write stuff for my ball head, and I'd have a hard time going back now.
Yeah,
wishing I had one this last week. I just got my 70 Mark II and was out shooting panorama shots, and I don't have one, so the parallax I ended up with in the shot was just horrid, and I had to spend forever in Photoshop trying to correct stuff so that it would look good.
Yeah, absolutely. I have just a regular mounting plate on my backup camera, the 60, and And when I went to use that, I was just so let down. I'm going to have to go get one for my backup camera now for trips like we just did, just because I'm so used to having that L bracket on there.
Yeah, that's very cool. And Darren, how about you?
Yep, my doodad of the week is actually another Improved Photography service that we offer. It's actually the Q&A section of Improved Photography, and it's called Ask a Photo Nerd. Jeff, our other editors on the website, Jim and myself, will actually answer questions for you for free on there. You just submit a question, we'll get back to you as soon as we can, and it's a great service that we are using to get back to the photosphere.
Yeah, it's been really cool. It's been very popular. So I've been wanting to add a forum to the website for a long, long time, but I thought, oh, forums are awful. You just have a simple question and you got to like register for their website, go get your email and log on there. And then you write, and then you got to remember to check back. And it's awful all around. And so I have been resistant to add a forum for that reason. But I know there are a lot of people who have questions and want them answered. Just a quick question on gear or something's not working for you. This is an awesome place to go. No need to register. You can get on there. You can post your question in seconds. It's on there. And there are, thousands of people on improvephotography.com every single day. And so questions are getting answered really fast. And there have been great answers. I'm checking it every single day. To make sure everybody gets an answer. So definitely check it out, improvephotography.com, and then click the Q&A button at the top. Next time something's bugging you in the photo world, go answer somebody's, or go ask a question, or go help somebody else out. Well, it's been a great episode. I love talking with you guys, Nick and Darren. I'm looking forward to your new show. And Jeff, I'm looking forward to your new show, which is going to be absolutely hilarious. Thank you, everybody, for your download of the Improved Photography Podcast. We appreciate your support, and we'll see you later.